Here it is!
From deep inside your radio.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, the Whoethon is over. 2 weeks of truth-telling by both parties. Man, so I just have to regurgitate a little bit here before we do anything else. Because, you know, you eat enough of that stuff and you don't, you're going to seize up. So, first of all, I guess John McCain really does like celebrities now. I guess he really isn't against the idea of a celebrity. I guess those commercials have to go into the trash bin. Because now he's found one. But there have been those on the liberal side who have pointed with loud disdain at what was not mentioned very much, if at all, during the Republican convention. So we won't spend a lot of time on that. But just to review, here's Mitt Romney from Wednesday night.
Here it is!
That's not Mitt Romney. I know Mitt Romney. And, Senator, you're no Mitt Romney. No, here's Mitt Romney.
What do you think? Is Washington now liberal or conservative? Let me ask you some questions. Is a Supreme Court decision liberal or conservative that awards Guantanamo terrorists with constitutional rights? It's liberal. Is government spending, putting aside inflation, liberal or conservative if it doubles since 1980? It's liberal. We need change, all right. Change from a liberal Washington to a conservative Washington.
All right. So, class, your assignment for this week before you take that test again is to review who's been running Washington for the last 8 years. You just go home, read up on that, who's controlled the presidency, the judiciary, and for most of the time, the Congress. And then we'll take that test again next week, okay? Talk about remedial. But now, the I do have to say that at the Republican convention, John McCain did at least mention the subject of torture. Now, in fairness, it was just his torture. And it happened a long time ago somewhere else, done by somebody else. But still, he at least mentioned it. Interestingly, he also mentioned, and I don't think I've heard him say this, at least in this public a forum before, that the torture he underwent broke him, by which he meant he signed a confession. Now, either John McCain really was a war criminal, as his confession stated, or torture made him lie. But of course, that's torture done the bad way, not the way we do it. And that brings me to what wasn't spoken of during the Democratic convention. Now, in both conventions, obviously, ladies and gentlemen, most of the speeches are cranked out by the same two people, whoever they are. But it's just, you know, the candidate has his speech writing machine that cranks out a different variety of the speech for everybody who speaks at the convention. That's why they're so fascinating now. The speeches at the Democratic convention, if anything, were more monolithic in tone than at the Republican convention. They always, everybody's speech mentioned the firefighter, the teacher, the person in military uniform, the auto worker in Michigan. They were all always really careful to mention those people or those concepts of people. Not mentioned the failure of the federal levees that caused the flooding of an American city. Not mentioned. And interestingly, not mentioned, as I alluded to earlier, torture, the idea that an American president could say this on the subject.
This debate is occurring because of the Supreme Court's ruling that said that we must conduct ourselves under the common Article 3 of the Geneva Convention. And that common Article 3 says that, you know, there will be no outrages upon human dignity. It's very vague. What does that mean? Outrages upon human dignity.
Yeah. It's so vague. So no mention of torture, no mention of extraordinary rendition. Oh, by the way, Polish intelligence sources have for the first time confirmed that the CIA ran a secret prison facility on Polish soil. This from the BBC in our News from Outside the Bubble. The admission comes after a report found the CIA had operated prisons for terror suspects in Poland and Romania. Poland and Romanian officials first denied the claims, but last month Warsaw launched an inquiry into the matter. Two anonymous intelligence officers made the claims about facilities being located in Poland in a daily newspaper. One of them states that between 2002 and 2005, the CIA held terror suspects inside a military intelligence training base in northeastern Poland. Only CIA had access to the zone, which was used because it was a secure site far from major towns and was close to a former military airport. The officer says the then prime minister knew about the base, but it was unlikely that he knew if the prisoners were being tortured because the Poles had no control over the Americans' activities. But we did render suspects, or in the case of the Canadian man, whom the Canadians have now paid $9 million compensation, people suspected of nothing, to countries like Syria and Egypt, knowing they'd be tortured. No mention of that at the Democratic Convention. No mention of the fact that to get these policies in place, the Bush administration, according to the new book, The Dark Side by Jane Mayer, systematically circumvented every existing constitutional protection, like consulting with the military on how to deal with military detainees, or letting the military lawyers weigh in on it, or letting the responsible officials with regard to anything, like the people in the Energy Department who said those aluminum tubes aren't for what you think they're for. Just circumventing that to create a little secret thing. No mention of that at the Democratic Convention. But the firefighter, the teacher, the out-of-work auto worker in Michigan, and the soldier, we honor their service. They were in every speech. The Hui-thons are over. Hello, welcome to the show.
We took the freeway out of town. We found a place to settle down. We bought a driveway and a swing set and a dog. You got your very own bathroom. I got my very own workshop in the basement. We sit around staring at the wall to wall. Take field trips to our favorite mall. Waiting for the day when all the kids grow up and leave us here. If you need me, I'll be downstairs with the shop vac. You can call, but I probably won't hear you because it's loud with the shop vac on. You'll be okay, cause you'll be upstairs with the TV. You can cry and I probably won't hear you because it's loud with the shop vac on. We hung a flag above the door, checked out the gourmet grocery store. I bought a mower I can ride around the yard. But we haven't got real friends, and now even the fake ones have stopped calling. Maybe if you forget to hide the keys, I'll take a ride to Applebee's. I'll come home drunk on daiquiris and throw up on the neighbor's lawn. If you need me, I'll be downstairs with the shop back. You can call, but I probably won't hear you because it's loud with the shop vac on. You'll be okay, you'll be upstairs with the TV. You can cry and I probably won't hear you because it's loud with the shop vac on. I like the Starbucks here, that's better than the other one, cause the other one's not as good. It's hard to make a left turn. And then it's time to go.
inside my head.
The ads can now be
floating up above the house and looking down.
It may seem silly,
I guess I gotta go back there.
49-year-old
unidentified man was never once any other answer. And as the freeway hums, the cars go by, the headlights roll across the sky. Many miles away, and I can see them speeding through the dark. And if you need me, I'll be downstairs with the shop back. You can call, but I probably won't hear you, because it's loud with the shop back on. Upstairs with the TV, you can cry and I probably won't hear you, because it's loud with the shop back on.
From the edge of America, from the home of the homeless, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of the show. And of course I know that you don't mention torture because it doesn't poll well. You know? I know that. I'm no dummy. Speaking of which, news from outside the bubble. Here, now. First of all, it takes the Times of London, owned by Rupert Murdoch, to tell us this about the family of Sarah Palin. The Palins' first child was named Track because he was born during the track and field season. If Track had been born during the basketball season, he would have been named Hoop. Another of the Palin children, Piper Indy, is named in honor of a snowmobile. Governor Palin's husband, Todd, has so far made no public explanation of his voter registration as a member of the Alaskan Independence Party between 1995 and 2002. Many members of that party want full secession from the U.S., and the party's motto is Alaska First. In contrast to John McCain's Country First slogan, the former secretary of the Alaska Independence Party, Lynette Clark, a freelance gold miner, why didn't they tell us about that at Career Day? This week described the McCain camp's efforts to deal with Todd Palin's secession sympathies as, quote, like a cat covering up crap in its litter box, unquote. By the way, you can't say crap in the New York Times, I found out. You can say dreck, however. More news from outside the bubble from The Guardian. Iraqi troops and Kurdish Peshmerga forces, that's the Kurdish military, are bracing for conflict in the disputed city of Kanakin. Is that your knees? Kanakin? In the most serious threat of clashes between Arabs and Kurds since the fall of Saddam Hussein. A delegation flew from Erbil. Wasn't he that weird kid in the 86th sitcom, Erbil, the capital of the Kurdish regional government is what it is, actually, to Baghdad at the weekend to try to resolve the crisis. The two main Kurdish parties are allied. Masoud Barzani, the president of the Kurdistan region, said Iraq was still living under the influence of Saddam's regime and the central government was not serious about sharing power with the Kurds. He claimed many military decisions were made without consultations with a Kurd who happens to be the army's chief of staff. The general, who was apparently torn between competing loyalties, says in Baghdad media that Iraqi troops had the right to launch operations in the area. The crisis has grown since July when the Iraqi government ordered the Kurdish forces to withdraw to Kurdistan from Diyala province. It also told the two main Kurdish parties to move out of the numerous government buildings in Diyala, which they took over when Saddam's regime fell. Last Sunday, the government in Baghdad shocked its Kurdish partners by announcing it would send auditors from the finance ministry to check customs revenues levied by Kurdish officials on the Turkish border. Transit traffic and smuggling are the main sources of revenue for some Kurds. Parts of northern Diyala province are claimed by Kurds as part of their ancient homeland. An estimated 85% of the population of Kanakin, which is situated on a dusty plateau close to Iran, are Kurds, and Kurdish leaders insist that it must remain under Peshmerga control. And, you know, because the surge has done so much. By the way, we'll get to what the surge did and didn't do in a minute, but so this is all now peaceful, right? from a Arabic newspaper, a Shark Alaus, how I can't pronounce it, but it's the leading Arabic international daily, international edition. A Shark Alausat. Having an interview with the Kurdish president, do you believe the federal government in Baghdad considers you as its partners in government? Answer, this is the main problem. During my recent visit to Baghdad, I emphasized this point. We asked them, are we partners or not? Sounds like Chris Matthews and Keith Olbermann. If you consider us as your partners, then this is one issue. If you do not, then this is another issue. They stress that we are partners. However, in real practice, I doubt this. Question, do you yourselves feel you're partners in the federal government? Answer, the actions of this government are weird. We are partners, but we do not have a role in the government. We are not partners in security, economic, and military issues, and we do not know anything about these institutions. Question, do you talk openly to them in Baghdad? What is happening? Is that you, during your meetings with the federal government, optimistic reports are issued, but later the opposite happens? Answer, during our recent visit, we reached good agreements. We have a program in which we're in agreement with the government in Baghdad, but when we returned to the Kurdistan region, everything we had agreed upon was ignored. The programs agreed upon are being marginalized. This state of affairs does not serve our coalition or Iraq or the future of Iraq. The consequences of monopolizing authority are well known. This situation will not lead to any result in favor of Iraq. All right, we can relax. Everything's cool there. I'd sent Keith and Chris over to run the place, but I think they're busy. The Sunday Telegraph of London reports one reason why the reasons why violence in Iraq has declined. One, we're paying off, as reported in a News Outside the Bubble segment on this broadcast a couple weeks ago, we're paying off the Sons of Iraq, the so-called Awakening movement. We're paying them to be on our side. And one reason why there's trepidation in Washington about withdrawing American troops is if we go, the Iraqi government won't continue to pay them, and these people are armed and trained, and good night. Also, Muqtada al-Sadr, the Shiite, can I say that on the radio, leader, announced a ceasefire, that is to say, of his people. Don't know why. Maybe we're paying him. Maybe Maliki's paying him. And then, 20 to 25,000 U.S. troops. And this, as I say from the Telegraph of London, more than 3,500 insurgents have been taken off the streets of Baghdad by an elite British force in a series of audacious black ops. While the majority of the terrorists were captured, several hundred who were mainly members of the organization known as Al-Qaeda in Iraq have been killed by the SAS. That's not the Scandinavian airline. That's part of a highly secretive unit called Task Force Black. The prime targets have been those intent on joining the wave of suicide car bombers that claimed around 3,000 lives a month in Baghdad at the height of the terrorist campaign. Task Force Black has nearly broken the back of the terrorist network and reduced bombings in Baghdad from 150 a month to just 2. That's not decided. From the Times of London again, Iraq is demanding an explanation from the United States after allegations that U.S. intelligence agencies have been spying on the prime minister. Allegations in Bob Woodward's new book. Yeah, who would have thunk it? The Israelis spy on us. If the claims made in the book prove to be true, says the Times of London, they will cast a shadow over relations between Baghdad and the CIA, according to an Iraqi government spokesman. If it is true, if it is a fact, it reflects that there is no trust. And it reflects also that the institutions in the United States are used to spy on their friends and their enemies in the same way, the Iraqi spokesperson told the Times. If it is true, it casts a shadow on the future relations with such institutions. We will raise this with the American side, and we will ask for an explanation, unquote. Other news from outside the bubble. People should have one meat-free day a week if they want to make a personal and effective sacrifice that would help tackle climate change. That's according to the world's leading authority on global warming, talking to the British newspaper The Observer, Dr. Rajendra Pachauri, chair of the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, which last year shared the Nobel Peace Prize, says people should then go on to reduce their meat consumption even further. He says diet change is important because of the huge greenhouse gas emissions and other environmental problems, including habitat destruction associated with rearing cattle and other animals. It's relatively easy to change eating habits compared to changing means of transportation, he says. Meat production, according to the UN, accounts for nearly a fifth of global greenhouse gas emissions. They're generated during the production of animal feeds, and while ruminants, particularly cows, emit methane, which is 23 times more effective as a global warming agent than carbon dioxide. In terms of immediacy of action and the feasibility of bringing about reductions in a short period of time, it clearly is the most attractive opportunity. Give up meat for one day a week initially and decrease it from there, says Pachauri, an Indian economist, who's a vegetarian. Easy for you. Easy for you, sir. He stressed other changes in lifestyle would also help to combat climate change. Professor Robert Watson, the chief scientific advisor for the Department of Environment, Food and Rural Affairs in Britain, says government could help educate people about the benefits of eating less meat. Eating less meat would help. There's no question about that, he says, but there are other things. Chris Lamb. Now, you couldn't write this. I couldn't. I know some people in town who could. Chris Lamb, head of marketing for the pig industry group, BPEX, this is in Britain. But the pig marketing industry head is Chris Lamb, of course. Wouldn't you? Says the meat industry has been unfairly targeted and was working hard to find out which activities had the biggest environmental impact and reduce those. Some ideas are contradictory, he says. For example, one solution to emissions from livestock was to keep them indoors, but this would damage animal welfare. Well, just give the cows Beano. See how easy it is? Finally, from the Sunday Telegraph of London, cancer linked to obesity. Findings show the effect to which an individual's risk of contracting seven types of cancer increases with every pound of weight put on. People who lose weight can reduce their chance of developing the disease. Studies published in the British Journal of Cancer. Researchers analyzed data from around the world, the Wolf Blitzer delivery, around the world on obesity, weight gain, and weight loss in relation to cancers of the breast, pancreas, kidney, colon, prostate, esophagus, and endometrium. Maintaining a healthy body weight is one of the most important things you can do to prevent cancer after not smoking, says the health information manager at Cancer Research UK. If you look at these cancers, they include two of the most common and some of which have very low survival rates, so body weight has a substantial impact on cancers that are common and those that are difficult to treat. The cancer which emerged as having the clearest link to weight gain was breast cancer in postmenopausal women. The risk increased by 5% with every 5 kilograms of weight gained. And no, I don't know how much that is. It's kilograms, ladies and gentlemen. News from outside the bubble, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. How's the nuclear waste thing going? Because, you know, it's clean, cheap, too cheap to meter, safe, too cheap, too safe to meter. German politicians are relearning, according to Der Spiegel, that it problem with nuclear waste is it never goes away. After a status report on barrels of leaking nuclear waste in a storage facility based at a former salt, rock, and potash mine in Lower Saxony, Environment Minister Sigmar Gabriel called the mine the most problematic nuclear facility in Europe. The interim report was dire enough for the Green Party's leader in the German parliament to lodge criminal complaints against the two government bureaus responsible. The mine was closed in 1964 and converted to an experimental nuclear facility 3 years later. Now it officially holds up to 130,000 metal drums of low and mid-level radioactive waste, but the report said highly radioactive plutonium had also been dumped in the mine, along with a number of nuclear fuel rods. Radioactivity readings there are at 8 times the safe level. Some barrels have tipped over and rusted through, and the worry is that salt water leaking from the mine is not just radioactive, but might contaminate public water supplies. The mine has been known to leak brine since 1988. Some experts fear it may collapse altogether by 2014. But the stuff we're building to contain nuclear waste, ladies and gentlemen, will be fine for 10,000 years, and the signs will warn people. German papers Notice say the scandal won't help the cause of nuclear power in one of the most anti-nuclear nations in Europe, especially since the mine was established for low-level waste rather than for the far more dangerous disposal of nuclear fuel rods. The last nuclear power plant in Germany will go dark about 2020, just about the time the mine may collapse. Clean, safe, cheap, too safe to meter. The digital wonderland, ladies and gentlemen, beckons us all. Dear Harry, I recently purchased the required digital converter box for digital television and was disappointed to discover that I was unable to tune in any of the major networks, as I had been previously able to with my bowtie antenna. I then went out and purchased a new larger antenna, but upon hooking it up to the converter box, still cannot pick up network signals. I had to rely on NPR for coverage of the conventions. That's a pity on two counts. Having just gone through the primary season, being able to view only three of the 20-some-odd debates which were covered on PBS or major networks even before my converter box problem, I note that keeping oneself informed is becoming increasingly income-dependent. Those unable to afford cable or satellite TV services are left in the dark. Sincerely, listener Dean. And because TV is not enough to screw up with this whole digital thing, HD radio, this is from the Baltimore Sun, offering all those features sounded like a natural, but 5 years after its introduction, digital radio, even with all its technological bells and whistles, is still struggling to gain a foothold in the American marketplace. We're where we'd like to be, but we'd like to make it go quicker, says Bob Strubel, president and chief executive officer of the company that peddled the digital technology that radio stations now have. Hey, listen, anybody who's listening on, I made this request once before. Anybody who's listening to this program on one of the HD sub-channels of your local public radio station, write in to me. Email me at harryshearer.com, and I'll send you a free copy of my new CD, Songs of the Bushmen. Can't be better than that. Last time I made this offer, zero replies, zero people listening on HD. I think, or maybe they just don't know how to operate the computers. We have to be realistic, Bob Strubel says. All right, then. Adding that any change in people's listening habits is a long-term proposition. Although met with what seems to be consumer indifference, HD radio proponents are retrenching. New promotion efforts center on the additional stations and playlists possible on HD. News releases trumpet that more than 80% of Americans are within range of HD radio broadcasts. The sound, they say, is better and crisper. But critics counter that HD radio signal range is only about 25 miles. And once a listener is outside it, it doesn't fade out. It just goes. It hasn't helped HD's infancy, says the Baltimore Sun, that another type of alternative radio satellite got a head start. HD's critics also contend the claims of improved sound quality are overblown and that they don't matter much to most consumers who are listening to iPods. I've had reports from people as soon as they start moving, the HD signal cuts off, says a Maryland-based software engineer who started a blog called Is HD Radio a Farce? To me, he says, this system is just totally flawed. I can't see why anybody would put up with this. And a senior vice president of marketing for a Texas-based producer of audio software technology says there's no real programming that warrants people altering their routines to peruse this new deal called HD Radio. Also, coincidentally, ladies and gentlemen, the HD Radio Alliance has lifted their restrictions on the HD2 channel. There's all sorts of HD channels out there that you can't hear. And now radio stations can put on as many commercials on the HD2 channel as they like. Because, you know, it's important. Now, ladies and gentlemen, there is there's a moment which I think needs to be commemorated on the broadcast today. As you may know, for 8 months, Bill O'Reilly has been challenging Barack Obama to come on Bill O'Reilly's television program. And finally, this week, coincidentally, on the day that John McCain delivered his acceptance address, Barack Obama did, in fact, appear on Bill O'Reilly's television program on Fox News. And, you know, said what he said. Kind of came with his non-confrontational hat on, for reasons best known to the Barack Obama campaign. But the part I wanted you to hear was from the Found Objects Department, before Senator Obama enters the room, when Bill O'Reilly is talking to one of Senator Obama's handlers.
You know, for an interview like this, I mean, I had to give this a lot of thought, how I'm going to do it, because there's a finite amount of time, you know. And I'm not going to keep him for more than 40. I mean, it'll be 40 and he'll be out. We're a very disciplined crew.
Well, I think we got 30, isn't it? What we got?
Yeah.
Okay, if you can stretch it a little bit longer, it'll be good for him, good for the candidate. Because the end part is going to be about him. I got to get the policy questions in. But the end part's all about him. And I think that's fair to give him a chance to define himself in front of my audience. So just keep that in mind, that I have to get the policy stuff in. It's a tightly formatted question, so I'm not going to go over. But if you can give me a tack on the 10 at the end, it'll be worth his while to do it. Because this is a kind of an interview that, and I'm sure you know, will be seen more than any other interview you ever do. This will be on YouTube. This will be all over the world.
We expect it well.
Right. There's no doubt about it. Everybody and the McCain people are going nuts, you know, because now they know that this is in play and it's in play. You know, it's a chess game. They did the Palin thing to you guys on Friday. You do this to them. And that's fine. That's the way the game is played. But when you're thinking about big picture stuff, I know it's a lot to ask the extra 5 or 6 minutes. It's worth it. It's worth it, because we don't expect you to come back to us again. You're welcome to come back anytime you want, and both of you guys are welcome to come back, okay? But we'll ask, but we expect this will be the definitive interview.
The definitive interview, ladies and gentlemen, the biggest one he'll ever do, because it's with O'Reilly.
O'Reilly, he was talking to his other friend. What was that name again? Wasn't that beer there one of mine? Stealing my beer is a sin. Stealing my drink has caused me to think about the rat that you are. Whoever you are, you push me too far. Now I'm gonna smash your face. O'Reilly, it was plain, was feeling no pain. I think you better reckon with me. Life at the bar was taking a jar. O'Reilly was as drunk as can be. Whoever you are, you pushed me too far.
Now I'm gonna smash your face.
Those drunks, they laugh so loud. O'Reilly was pleasing the crowd. The fight was on the bar.
In a turmoil, the fun had begun. O'Reilly was the prince of good cheer. And just a vicar, some drunken bum, and laid his hands on O'Reilly's gin beer. You've stolen my beer, and that ain't right. You're getting yourself in a fight. Whoever you are, you push me too far. Now I'm gonna smash your face.
Those drunks, they laugh so loud. O'Reilly was pleasing the crowd. The band was on the bar. O'Reilly was swinging. O'Reilly was singing. Says, I'm gonna smash your face.
That's me.
O'Reilly was smashing his face.
This is Le Show, and now...
He's not a general.
He commands no troops.
He's not an inspector.
He peeks at no stoops.
He's an Inspector General. Oh, yeah.
News from the Inspectors General, ladies and gentlemen. Some employees of the Health and Human Services Department didn't know how to get government discounts on airfare. As a result, they spent nearly $500,000, no, more than $500,000, more than necessary to fly just in fiscal 2006. This from the Inspector General of the Health and Human Services Department. They got the largest discount on only 16% of their ticket purchases, where both a standard and discounted fare were available. The department would have saved almost $200,000 if its employees had chosen the discounts just half of the time, like other federal employees. Federal employees choose the government-wide discounted fares an average of 50% of the time when both fares are available. It comes through the General Service Administration's program for federal employees. Many of the employees of HHS, Health and Human Services, according to the Inspector General, are unaware of the discount fares. They didn't understand the options or know how to identify the discounts on the website. The employees were asked in the survey, how did you learn that the one is the standard fare and that the other is the lower cost fare? 55% of employees said they learned it by, quote, taking this survey, unquote. 54% of them didn't search for the discounted fares. The Inspector General recommended that officials teach employees about finding discounts. Evidence of the fraud, waste, and abuse following Hurricane Katrina continues to mount. Now comes a report by the Office of Inspector General at the Department of Homeland Security concluding that FEMA paid out millions in excessive costs because controls on contractors were not always implemented and enforced. The report said FEMA had hired some big-time contractors to identify sites for temporary housing and do some design and prep work. The contractors were also supposed to provide maintenance and security. The report said FEMA did not constantly enforce the controls and follow up on outstanding matters in a timely manner. In addition, not all contractors were in compliance with the requirements of the contract. Did not obtain permits as required. When FEMA rejected 176 sites as unworkable, they paid cancellation fees to the contractors. About $5.6 million in those fees was deemed excessive by the Inspector General. And former Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez told investigators he could not recall whether he took home notes regarding the government's most sensitive national security program.
Yeah.
And that he did not know they contained classified information, despite his own markings that they were top secret eyes only. This according to a report from the Justice Department Inspector General. Gonzalez improperly carried notes about the warrantless wiretapping program in an unlocked briefcase, failed to keep them in a safe at his home 3 years ago because he could not remember the combination. This makes Sandy Berger look like a genius. An NSA official who reviewed the notes said they contained references to operational aspects of the wiretapping program, including a top-secret code name, information that had been zealously protected by the National Security Agency and was not a close call in terms of its sensitivity, said the report. The notes were at his home or in his briefcase for an indeterminate amount of time following his move from White House counsel to attorney general. Ultimately, Gonzalez stored them in a safe outside his Justice Department office, a safe that was accessible by people who lacked the requisite clearances to see them. He also stored 17 other classified documents on electronic surveillance and detainee interrogation programs in that safe. Mishandling classified material violates Justice Department policies and can result in criminal charges. Prosecutors in the department's National Security Division declined to bring a case after reviewing the allegations and consulting with career officials. Through his attorneys and advisors, Gonzalez characterized the amount of material he possessed as limited and said the lapses were unintentional. During his government service, Gonzalez received at least two briefings on security procedures and signed a form indicating that negligent handling of sensitive information could, quote, cause irreparable injury to the United States or be used to advantage by a foreign nation, end quote. Before he took the notes home, he met with officials at the Justice Command Center, which is set up to house sensitive information, said the report. News from Inspectors General, ladies and gentlemen. And, oh, about that Attorney General.
He's not a general.
He commands no troops.
He's not an inspector.
He peeks at no stoops.
He's an inspector general.
Yes, we know, but what about the Attorney General?
I was loyal to George Bush whenever he'd call. Even if he wanted nothing at all, I was loyal on the rise, I was loyal on the fall. 'Cause even I know what the point of the fall is. Give the critics the head of Alberto Gonzalez. The Geneva Conventions I helped redefine, calling them quaint. I think that quote was mine. 'Cause certain detainees were just over the line. In the room with top lawyers, it's clear where the gall is. In the legalese head of Alberto Gonzalez.
Gonzalez.
The first Hispanic was a badge I'd wear with pride. It got me upstairs and it got me inside. In Texas, George Bush named me to his Supreme Court. Could the big one be next? I'd sure need his support. So my advice was the most approving sort. If I wanted the robe, I'd give nothing but solace and let Bush be the head of Alberto Gonzalez. We wanted to change prosecutors for friends. A big Senate hearing is where that trail ends. The truth doesn't break, but it certainly bends. I gave a display of what total lack of recall is. Just a memory hole in the head of Alberto Gonzalez.
Gonzalez.
The first Hispanic was a badge I'd wear with pride. It got me upstairs and it got me inside. I'll spend time with my family. I'll spend time alone. I'll sit by my computer, I'll sit by my phone, hoping that my old friend will just throw me a bone. Even though I know how unlikely that call is, so I'll take back the head of Alberto Gonzalez.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, news of the warm, won't you?
Soft, listen to the warm.
The thawing of permafrost in northern latitudes, which greatly increases microbial decomposition of carbon compounds in the soil, will dominate other effects of warming in the region and could become a major force promoting the release of carbon dioxide and thus further warming. This is from a new assessment in the current issue of Bioscience. The study more than doubles previous estimates of the amount of carbon stored in the permafrost. The new figure is equivalent to twice the total amount of atmospheric carbon dioxide. The authors conclude that releases of the gas from melting permafrost could amount to roughly half those resulting from global land use change during this century. Freeze the permafrost. Come on. Despite projections by some scientists of global seas rising by 20 feet or more by the end of the century as a result of warming, a new University of Colorado Boulder study concludes that global sea rise of much more than 6 feet is a near physical impossibility. That's the good news. Here's the bad news. It is improbable that global warming will be kept below 7.2 degrees Fahrenheit, despite double the rise considered safe to avoid climate catastrophe, according to an influential new report, says the Scotsman newspaper. Internationally, it's long been agreed government should aim to keep global temperature rise below 3.6 degrees Fahrenheit to avoid climate change spiraling out of control. However, a bleak new study by scientists at the Tyndall Center, a leading organization for climate change research at Manchester University, now suggests we should be adjusting our expectations toward far higher rises. It warns carbon dioxide in the atmosphere will almost certainly stabilize at levels of 650 parts per million, roughly equivalent to a 4-degree temperature increase. The authors write, quote, given the reluctance at virtually all levels to openly engage with the unprecedented scale of both current emissions and their associated growth rates, even an optimistic interpretation of the current framing of climate change implies that stabilization much below 650 parts per million is improbable. Even stabilizing levels at that point will require industrialized nations to begin to make draconian emission reductions within a decade. They argue planned economic recession would be needed to keep climate change at this level. Yeah, I can hear the calls for that at the next two conventions. I will bring you planned recession. Hot on the heels of the findings that tropical cyclones have been intensifying over the past few decades, researchers report this week in Science that global warming will cause sea levels to rise much faster by the end of the century than officially projected. The rising temperatures will cause the oceans to swell with melted glacial ice, the study finds, likely flooding substantial portions of Florida and Bangladesh, as well as many other low-lying, densely populated areas of the world. And the bit of good news, the Montreal Protocol has not only helped to prevent damage to the Earth's ozone layer, which was its primary purpose, it has also slowed global warming. Nature magazine reports 21 years ago, the protocol was drawn up to restrict the use of chemicals such as fluorocarbons that contributed to the destruction of the ozone layer. But now sophisticated climate chemistry models have shown that the protocol has done much more than rescue the planet from sunburn. Climate chemistry models describe what would have happened if the Montreal Protocol had never existed. They call it the world avoided. Chlorine levels were rising quickly in the late 60s and 70s. It is known to be the main driver for atmospheric ozone depletion in the stratosphere. Computer models simulated climate chemistry for comparison. The two levels, one post-Montreal Protocol and one previous, what they found in a world without the Montreal Protocol was massive losses of ozone, but the model also showed big effect on the planet's climate. So, dodge one bullet. Here comes another. News of the Warm, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast.
Slow, smooth, and easy. Hold, hug, and squeeze me. Slow, smooth, and easy. Hold, hug, and squeeze me. Slow, smooth, and easy. Hold, hug, and squeeze me. Slow, smooth, and easy. Love me night and day. You got something, baby, I just can't explain. When I see you, baby, you hit me like a hurricane. I'm not gonna share you with somebody else. I'm just gonna love you till I kill myself. I'm gonna love you slow, smooth, and easy. Slow, smooth, and easy. Slow, smooth, and easy. Love me night and day. Slow, smooth, and easy. Slow, smooth, and easy.
slow, smooth and easy. Love me night and day. Slow, smooth and easy. Slow, smooth and easy. Slow, smooth and easy. Love me night and day. Slow, smooth and easy. Slow, smooth and easy. Slow, smooth and easy. Love me night and day.
Yeah, you know I love you, baby. You don't have to doubt. You got something, baby, I just can't do without. There's a time for working, there's a time for play. Now's the time for loving. Please don't take your love away. Just love me slow, smooth and easy. Hold, hug and squeeze me. Slow, smooth and easy. Hold, hug and squeeze me. Slow, smooth and easy. Hold, hug and squeeze me. Slow, smooth and easy. Love me night and day. Slow, smooth and easy. Slow, smooth and easy. Slow, smooth and easy.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Vice President of the United States, Dick Cheney, has been visiting Europe. Yeah, the same Europe that the Republican convention booed. But I tell you what, Hurricane Gustav saved them from having to hear Dick Cheney in person. So it's an ill wind. But he was in Georgia. Then he went to, I think, Ukraine. Anyway, ended the week in Italy. And he called Russia's actions in the conflict with Georgia, quote, an affront to civilized standards, unquote.
What does that mean? Outrageous upon human dignity.
No, an affront to civilized standards. It's totally, totally different. And now, ladies and gentlemen, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
Jack Abramoff, the now disgraced lobbyist behind a corruption scandal that ensnared prominent lawmakers and Washington power brokers, pleaded with a federal judge to reduce his sentence, apologizing for his blundering but saying he's not a bad man. He just had a bad plan. I'm not a bad man, although to read all the news articles, one would think I was Osama bin Laden, he says. But I did many bad things. I lied to clients. Hey, that isn't... If that made you a bad man, there are agents in this... Oh, sorry. I lied to clients even while working to get them the results they expected. I cheated my law firm and took advantage of public officials. But he did apologize. I have a lot to make up for and a lot of amends to make. If I can ever earn more than a mere living again, I will be paying back those I have harmed for the rest of my life. Jack Abramoff, ladies and gentlemen. The German Association for the Deaf has officially apologized to deaf Jews for the injustices done to them during the Nazi period. In a statement issued at last week's German Cultural Festival of the Deaf in Cologne, Alexander von Mayen spoke with shame of the rejection and expulsion of its Jewish members, many of whom perished in the Holocaust. We would like to officially express our deep sorrow for the suffering caused to so many deaf Jews, he said in part. We are aware of the union's failures and therefore ask you for forgiveness. Its own members were also persecuted by the Nazi regime, which tried to rid society of all lives it considered unworthy. This is what, 2008? Just checking. After an extraordinary day that saw him plead guilty to two felonies, Detroit Mayor Kwame Kilpatrick spoke for the first time, telling Detroiters, I've already said, you need to stand strong for the city of Detroit. Sometimes standing strong means stepping down, he said. I take full responsibility for my actions. Our challenge now is to put the anguish and turmoil of recent months behind us. He did apologize, however. He did apologize. Now he goes to jail. Former Democratic National Committee Chairman Don Fowler apologized for recently joking that Hurricane Gustav's landfall on the same day as the opening of the Republican National Convention suggested God was on the Democrats' side. comments were intended to make light of the late Reverend Jerry Falwell's remark that the terrorist attacks of 9/11 was God's punishment for abortion and homosexuality. This was just poking fun, he says, and he apologized. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Gentlemen, that's going to conclude this week's edition of Le Show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations, over NPR worldwide throughout Europe on the USEN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet. Available on the mighty 104 in Berlin, on Sirius and XM satellite radio. Around the world via the internet, on your computer whenever you want it, at two different locations, live and archived, HarryShearer.com or KCRW.com. Available as a free download for members at www.audible.com/LeShow. And available as a free podcast from KCRW.com. And it'd be just like knowing what outrages upon human dignity means if you'd agree to join with me then. Would you? Alrighty, thank you very much. Now, well, I know that this broadcast is not heard in New York City for complicated reasons having to do with the hipness of that metropolis, but if you're in or around New York City, I'm opening a little exhibition at the Susan Inglett Gallery this coming Friday, September 12th, and it goes for till they close it. I'll be there September 12th, Friday night, but you can come even when I'm not there. It's on West 24th Street in Manhattan. And yes, the head of Alberto Gonzalez was from my new CD, Songs of the Bushmen, available online at Amazon. Oh, I can't say that. It's not available anywhere. Forget about it. You can't buy it. It's not for you. A typical show chapeau to the San Diego, Chicago, Pittsburgh, and Hawaii desks for their help in the broadcast. And thanks, as always, to Pam Halstead. HarryShearer.com is your destination for the playlists of the music heard on this broadcast, as well as the email address of the host, if you want to yak back. HarryShearer.com. Always open. We never close. Well, we're never open. It's a website, baby. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.